Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Grandma's hands clapped in church on Sunday morning. Grandma's hand played a tambourine so well. Grandma's hand used to issue out a warning. She'd say, Billy, don't you run so fast. Might fall on a piece of glass. Might be snakes there in that grass. Grandma's hand.
Welcome back to Ball Don't Lie right here on 104.9 The Horn. It is a Smooth Soul Monday edition of Ball Don't Lie. This is my man Patrick plays jams intended to soothe the tortured soul of sports fans who may have had a tough weekend. That was certainly the case for a Denver Nuggets fan who lost game two. Denver Nuggets at home. First home playoff loss of the playoffs for the Denver Nuggets. And we'll get to breaking that down. Miami with a 111-108 win in game two. Shout out to my man Patrick, always doing us a great service to DJ a Smooth Soul Monday and all the musically themed days of the week. You can hit us up on the Specs text line, 512-337-3776. You also can hit us up via Twitter. Hardball Harge is at Hardball Harge in the Twitterverse. Patrick Davis at It's Patrick Davis in the Twitterverse. And I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. We'll get to Raj around the day coming up next segment. I went and did some more deep dives about the coaching additions to the special assistant to the head coach designation for Paul Christ and for Joe DeCamillis, and we'll talk a little bit more about that coming up in Raj Rant of the Day, a specific concept that I went rabbit-holing with this weekend. So we'll talk about that, about my deep dive, all of that. So we'll get into some Texas football conversation in Raj Rant of the Day. In the meantime, let's talk NBA Finals, gentlemen. 111-108 win for the Miami Heat in Game 2. Both of you guys, I believe, predicted a gentleman's sweep.
Yes, sir.
Both of you predicted this thing will be over in five games. After watching the Miami Heat win game two, and it was a game that Denver had a chance, I mean, to win. They were up double digits in this contest at one point. But some slight adjustments by Eric Spoelstra. He did start Kevin Love. Like I said, that is a slight adjustment. But Kevin Love was able to at least put a body, a bigger body on Aaron Gordon. That allowed Jimmy Butler to switch over his defensive responsibilities to Jamal Murray. And they were able to neutralize Jamal Murray. And that helped out tremendously because they wanted to choke the passing lanes for the Nuggets and force Jokic to be predominantly a scorer rather than a scorer and a distributor. Now, he did get his. He did score 41 points. But it was an interesting strategy that did end up getting a win for the Miami Heat. Harge, I'll throw it to you first. You're still going with the gentleman's sweep after watching the Miami Heat steal game two in Denver.
Yep. I'm still rolling with the gentleman's sweep, although I am impressed with the way that Miami was able to change the way they thought about it. But I'll continue to say this. If their role players play their role, Miami's going to be tough. You look at a Duncan Robinson and what he was able to do, even though he was struggling the entire game. And then that fourth quarter, he went berserk. Mm-hmm. And that was a crucial part. Although Denver was still in the game the entire way. Denver was leading the game until the fourth quarter.
They were leading going into the fourth quarter. They were leading by 8 points with 12 minutes left in the fourth quarter.
Which is why I still believe that they still have the formula for it. They're just going to need to pick it up defensively. You talked about Coach Malone and his quote about how they were lackluster and effortless on the defensive end in that fourth quarter. Michael Porter was one of the guys that he kind of called out as KCP. They need to play better on defense. I mean, that is what it's all about. If they can go out there and do that, then everything will be okay. But I'm not going to take anything away from Spoelstra going to the game, letting Joker get his and just stopping everybody else. That's a good game plan. But those role players need to pick it up for the Denver Nuggets. If they do that, I think it's going to be that gentleman's sweep that we were talking about. Patrick?
48% shooting from the three-point range, too.
Yep.
Big for Miami.
That's huge for them.
I mean, I will say we've seen one thing in this series already, though. When we're giving advantages of which team had what, that Miami has more depth. And they've been able to go a couple different routes. We see Kevin Love not getting a lot of run early. Didn't them play a lot in game one.
Mm-hmm.
Starts game two, comes in and gives them some good minutes. So there's just a lot more options that they're going to add Tyler Hero back to this probably in game three. Mm-hmm. So they just have a couple more options. So if somebody's not hitting, someone's not playing at that level, they can kind of switch it out a little bit more and go, all right, if Caleb Martin's not hitting shots right now, we can kind of put him back and put in Max Strus or Gabe Vincent and see if those guys hit. And for Denver, they need their guys to play. So
yep.
When you see KCP and Michael Porter Jr. not play well, you don't really have an option of, oh, we'll just play Christian Brown more or Bruce Brown much more. You pretty much have to go, you guys have to perform. You guys mm-hmm. have to step it up. So I think that's going to be the main conversation is, hey, man, there isn't someone behind you ready
right.
to jump in. You know, you have to stay for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. He has to stay out of foul trouble. He fouls out of that game. You can't buy into the pump fakes. He was really the main guy mm-hmm. who's buying into a lot of these pump fakes. You got to be just a little bit more disciplined. I think he's the one who picked up a foul falling over.
Yeah.
And then basically he's like, what do you want me to do? He's like, he just jumped on top of me. I can't stop that.
Right.
But you have to just be like, yeah, well, you can't fall over running out at him then. That's mm-hmm. that's where you picked up the foul from. I think that's where Denver is going to have, if Miami's going to find a weakness in this, you have to really try to get in to some other guys. And I said earlier it's Aaron Gordon, but he's been playing really great in this series. You have to try and pick apart some of these guys that are supposed to be playing big minutes and go, look, we know Joker is going to kill us. We know that.
Yep.
But we can't let him kill us by letting other people kill us and getting those assists. So we have to let him – he's going to get his points. Mm-hmm. Do not double down on him. Stay on your guys and try and limit what their role players can do because they don't have the ability like we do to go to so many different options.
And don't forget, too, they got the chance to shoot free throws this game.
Yeah.
They got
yeah.
to
well,
the free throw line. They went and attacked the rim, and they shot a ton of free throws, 20 free throws, and they were 90% from the free throw line. So that's another plus that changed the way that they played the last game.
Yeah, and also, yeah, in addition to – that's a great point because I believe that was the fewest – free throw attempts in any playoff game in NBA history. Yeah. So you flip that into 20 free throws the next game. They shot terribly and from three-point range in game one, one of their worst three-point shooting performances of the playoffs. And this past game in game two, they were 17 of 35, 48.6% from three-point range. That would be, I mean, guys, they've shot over 48 point. They've shot over 48.5% from three-point range in six games so far this postseason. Twice against the Bucks. They shot one game, they shot 60% from three-point range versus the Bucks.
60.
They shot 54% and 51.6% and 50% in three games from three-point range versus the Celtics.
Yo.
And versus the Nuggets, they've had their first game shooting 48.6%. Like, I thought it was unsustainable, but I mean, they keep proving me wrong.
Yep.
I mean,
they figure it out, man.
They right now, they're shooting damn near 40% as a team from three-point range. They have the largest leap, the largest difference in regular season three-point percentage and postseason three-point percentage in NBA history. We've never seen anything
it's
like
so
this,
crazy.
Guys. We haven't seen anything
so
like it before. But one thing to get into as well is the fourth quarter scoring for them. We just talked about it. Denver is crazy. I understand why you guys are still saying Denver should have a gentleman sweep here. Because they entered the fourth quarter leading by 8 points. 83-75.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy Butler's on a bench at this point. And I'm thinking, Jimmy Butler's on a bench and they're coming the fourth quarter down 8 points? Man, this might get ugly in a hurry because we know how Denver can score. But with Jimmy Butler still on the bench, Miami managed to take the lead. They took the lead with Jimmy. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Butler came back into the game with a little over eight minutes remaining in the fourth quarter, and they had already taken the lead because Duncan Robinson had this just unbelievable stretch where he scored like 10 points in a 5-minute span, which just was on fire. But honestly, that is the Miami Heat. That is their MO. You go look at the point differential in, quarter by quarter for the Miami Heat. Unbelievable, guys. It's just unfathomable. They're minus, it's in the playoffs, in 20 playoff games. Minus one in the first quarter, minus 11 in the second quarter. They are minus 12 in the third quarter, but they are plus 90 in the fourth quarter.
What?
They're getting outscored in every
plus
quarter.
Plus 90.
Every quarter in the playoffs except the fourth. In the fourth, they're outscoring their opponents by 90 points.
Yeah, that's the crazy, crazy stats.
They're plus 21. They're plus 21 in the finals in two games in the fourth quarter point differential. Crazy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's one of those things that is you can't figure it out, right? They're just that anomaly, right? The Miami Heat are a strange team. You talked about it in the last series, the undrafted players, right? Who they are, how they come about it, and the hard work, the chip on the shoulder that they have. And then you come up with this stat, too, about how they outscore teams in the fourth quarter. It's amazing. They just figure things out.
They do.
But they always wait. They're dramatic.
Well, but that's another deal, though, of having the depth of being able to give your guys some rest. That when you get to that fourth quarter and everyone's huffing and puffing, you still have a few guys that got legs because they're not playing massive minutes, mm-hmm. but they are an important part of the team. And a guy like Duncan Robinson has that run. He can play. He can have energy in the fourth quarter because he's only playing 20 minutes a game.
Yeah.
So he's not a guy like Jimmy Butler who's playing 35-40 who you have to worry about. Yeah, his legs in the fourth quarter are questionable, especially in Denver. When your defender starts to step off you and he's a step mm-hmm. slower because he's playing 35, 40 minutes, mm-hmm. and you go, oh, yeah. All right, refs are calling the game the way we can attack now because they're calling things when we go inside, so I have no reason not to attack. Because the only reason you don't want to attack is if you feel the refs are letting them bump you around inside and you go, my percentage is going way down. And this, they were calling it when he went to the rim, so he knew to just start going to the rim. They were trying to get out of. They were trying not to get too much in foul trouble in Denver, and Miami just found that with a little bit of weakness and that little bit of time, and just dove all over them.
I really can't believe what the Miami Heat are doing. Like it is truly, literally unbelievable. I'll give you some more stats. It's kind of more about the playoff run and some of what they did in Game 2 as well. But you go look at it. So here's a couple of crazy stats for you. In their 9 postseason wins against Milwaukee, Boston, and Denver, the Heat are shooting 47% from 3-point range combined.
Mm.
49% on heavily contested threes in those games. How are you shooting a higher percentage on contested threes than you are actually on just overall threes?
Yeah.
They've overcome a deficit of 12 points or more, like they did in Game 2. They were down 15 at one point. They've overcame a deficit of 12 points or more to win this season 7 times in the playoffs. By the way, that is the most in the last 25 years for any team in the playoffs. They did it 9 total times in the regular season.
Mm.
They've done it 7 times in the postseason.
That's how they do it, man.
It's crazy. Like none of the stats, none of it is making any sense. They're defying not a lot of odds, but they are the biggest underdog, arguably, in finals history for a reason.
They are, and I mean, we can look at it still too. As Denver had a 3-point shot, that wasn't a terrible shot from Jamal Murray.
Oh, it was a good
to
look.
Tie the game, send it to overtime. And I know a lot of people got mad at Michael Malone for not calling the timeout there. I get why you don't. If you do, you're 95% chance they're going to foul you on the inbound, and you're getting the 2 shots in a.
Yeah.
So you know that, hey man, if we call a timeout, they're probably fouling. You think maybe they're going to foul anyway, and you have a guy like Jamal Murray and Jokic on the team where you say, I trust this guy to shoot because he's the reason we're in the finals. Is Jamal Murray has been playing like that, so I trust him to get his own shot and not let a really good defensive team set up their defense.
Yeah.
And basically take away Jokic, take away Jamal Murray from you, and then who do you go to in that moment? So I get why they didn't. It maybe would have been nicer if they could have called a timeout and run a set play, but I didn't think the 3 that they took was that bad. Jamal Murray's hit tons of them in this playoffs.
He does. He's got a Steph Curry feel to him sometimes.
So,
yeah.
So but that's how close this game was. Was it was a shot that was off the rim for three to send it to overtime, and then who knows what happens in overtime. It seems like Miami's doing everything they can, throwing haymakers and everything to win these games.
Yeah, they are.
And Denver's not playing great, and they're a shot away, and they're, whew, we escaped. And that's why I say Denver's still in this because, you know, it could be Denver just falls apart down the stretch and Miami plays lights out basketball for three more games in this series and wins the series. But you, when you watch it, you have to go, well, the better team is playing poorly and still have to overcome so much Miami does to be able to beat the better team.
To your point, the comments from Mike Malone in the postgame. We'll hear from Coach Spoelstra here in a second, too, because he was asked about his strategy against Jokic. And Ramona Shelburne, I believe, asked a question, and he seemed offended by the presentation of the question. We'll get to that audio here in a second. But this is the quote Harich mentioned earlier in the show about Mike Malone being critical of his team. He said, quote, let's talk about effort. This is the NBA Finals. We are talking about effort. That's a huge concern of mine. You guys probably thought I was just making up some storyline after game one when I said we didn't play well. We didn't play well tonight. The starting lineup to start the game, it was 10-2 Miami's to start of the third quarter. They scored 11 points in 2 minutes and 10 seconds. We had guys out there that were just whether feeling sorry for themselves for not making shots or thinking they can just turn it on and off. This is not the preseason. This is not the regular season. This is the NBA Finals. That to me is really, really perplexing, disappointing. I asked the team. I asked them, you guys tell me why they lost, and they knew the answer. Miami came in and outworked us, and we were by far our least disciplined game of the 16 or 17 playoff games. Whatever it is now, so many breakdowns. They exploited every one of our breakdowns and scored. So he was really critical of his group. It's to Patrick's point, he doesn't think they played well. He'd been essentially dogging his team in the post game after each of his games, and they won the first one. So there's a lot of room for improvement for the Nuggets. But I will say, Miami makes you ugly.
Yes.
They make you play ugly.
They make you play sloppy basketball.
Yes. It breaks your
character.
It does.
Yeah.
They make you, they really do. They kind of disrupt the overall kind of circuitry. That's part of the Jokic game plan, like whether, you know, it's the, whether that's the strategy that Exposures wants to admit or whether he utilized the strategy or not. There is a working theory out there that you don't want Jokic to be a scorer and a distributor. Take away one of those things, depending on what your team does well defensively. Either make him a scorer and that's it, or make him a distributor and that's it. Don't let him do both. You got a, you know, big time, defensive big man. Maybe you can go another strategy. In this particular game, in game two, a lot of people believed, and we'll hear from Eric Spoelstra in a second because he wanted to combat this theory or this notion. A lot of people believe that the Miami Heat's game plan strategy was to just let Jokic or force Jokic to become predominantly a scorer, and that way he is not also a scorer and a distributor. The evidence behind that is in game two, he only had 4 assists, as Patrick mentioned earlier. By the way, that's the lowest assist total of the playoffs for him. Now, those 4 assists, they led to 9 points for the team. In game one, 14 assists he had created 31 points. So that combined with his 27 points in game one, that's 58 total points created. In game two, he had 41 points on his own. Now, he was beast mode, but only 4 assists that led to 9 points. So overall, he created just 50 points compared to 58. I know it sounds like, what, 50 compared to 58? Yeah. But, I mean, it was 111 to 108.
I was going to say, it was an 8-point difference. Yeah, that's right.
If you can get Jokic total points created down 8 points, because he's averaging 10 assists per – he's averaging over 10 assists per game.
That's the biggest part about it. That's why he had triple doubles.
Exactly. And they're not, and they're not 3-point assists all the time, too.
Right.
That's the game plan that if you're looking for – how to combat Jokic, because you can't defend him and you can't neutralize him. He's just that damn good.
No, you can't.
You're just hoping to make him less productive. Can I get you to 50 total points for instead of 58?
Yeah.
Goal, done. And that's what they did.
Yep.
It worked.
Can I get your turnovers up?
Exactly.
He had 5 turnovers.
That's big. Good point.
And that's it. It's playing passing lanes. It's playing places to where normally you help off of him and you're helping off another player to go onto him to double him. And instead, you're basically watching him and standing in between him and your player to not allow there to be any pass in between. So if he tries to make the pass, which he can do, you're going to get some steals off of those too because he's trying to go in. And when he feels, you know, you're going to be able to get some weak side help too when he's looking for the pass, it's not there, and maybe you can sneak along the baseline and poke the ball out as well.
Yeah, it's just trying to make his life as difficult as possible. He's going to get it. He's going to get his. He's just too good to stop. Can we have this every expert expo sound from Eric Spoelstra? I believe the audio has the question in it, so we'll just play the audio. Here's Eric Spoelstra in the postgame.
Hey, Coach. Ramona Shelburne, ESPN. This is probably oversimplifying things, but sometimes when teams play against Jokic, you turn him into a scorer, you turn him into a passer, and he controls the game. He only had 4 assists tonight.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. You know, it's just that's the untrained eye that says something like that. This guy's an incredible player. You know, twice in 2 seasons, he's been the best player on this planet. You can't just say, oh, make him a scorer. That's not how they play. They have so many different actions that just get you compromised. We have to focus on what we do. You know, we try to do things the hard way, and he requires you to do many things the hard way. He has our full respect. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Coach.
Thank you, Coach.
And I don't know why he was so offended. I thought she tried to, put it into perspective. She does say, I think I'm oversimplifying this.
Right.
So she does preface it with that. But either way, my man Matt Butler, he talks a lot of basketball, and he does a lot of fantasy. He watches a ton of games, like my man Patrick. Like, he's watching Spring League, and all, he got the NBA mm-hmm. pass like you guys, so he watches a lot of basketball. And he said he describes Jokic as just a supercomputer. He's basically a basketball supercomputer, and just kind of using his description, if he is that, you just want to present him with basically as much degree of difficulty as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's gonna achieve and produce, and as my man Patrick mentioned, you want to make that pass, make him have to put the pass at pinpoint accuracy, right? If it's an entry pass, all right, make him a little bit hard. He's got to work for the entry pass, those kind of things, and he is going to make the right decision 85 to 90% of the time because he's a basketball supercomputer. And if you want to increase the varying degrees of difficulty, and he'll choose the path of least resistance. And I think with Spoelstra choking the kind of life force out of the passing lanes and the supporting cast, the path of least resistance for him was, I'm just going to go score. It's easier.
Yep.
Go score. Now, does that lead to the Denver Nuggets being a less overall lethal and overall productive offense? There's a belief that they lose the collaborative identity and their rhythm. And it kind of chokes the circuitry of their offense when you just let him become predominantly a scorer.
Right.
And the Nuggets are 14-2 in the regular season when Jokic attempts 10 or fewer shots. They were 7-13 when he had 8 or fewer assists. Now, does that mean, oh, man, those are hard and fast numbers? Not necessarily. It's just giving you a gauge that when you make him predominantly a scorer and less of a distributor, the team is not as dangerous. He is still dangerous, but the team is not as dangerous. They're 0-4 all time when he scores 40-plus points in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that it works every time, but maybe it's...
But it works all the time.
Yeah, maybe it's not a silly hypothesis to throw out there that,
right.
Hey, you know what, let Jokic score, or at least let's devote our resources, allocate resources to stop the supporting cast, which we know we can stop.
Yeah.
We know we can do a better job of that. We can't, no matter what we throw at Jokic, there's no guarantee we're going to stop that.
Yeah, we
dude.
Can slow him down.
Yes,
we can slow
it.
Him down is all we can do. And then sometimes out of that, he creates other buckets for other people.
Yep.
But I mean, really, in all reality, it's just going to be, there's going to be a lot more, you'll probably see more screens off ball and things of that nature in game 3, where you see Denver try to basically, for a defender to play passing lanes like that, a lot of times you're looking at Joker, even though your guy, so you have a hand on your guy and you're kind of watching the play on the inside. And if you start doing more movement, you take away the player's ability to watch what Joker's doing at the same time, because he's trying to run through screens. He's trying to keep an eye on when you're cutting back mm-hmm. and forth. And so you just have more movement. Now you still need to hit the same spots so that, Joker can make a move and know where his guys are going to be. But those types of things, you have all those plays in the playbook. You're ready to go. You just have to create more movement off of the ball to try and take away Miami's ability to sit back and watch.
Yeah.
Where normally they're helping off, the defender sits in the corner.
Now they're playing
passing
lanes.
He's always open.
Yeah.
Now they're playing passing lanes.
Yeah.
So you got to take that guy in the corner and have him run across baseline, stuff like that, try and confuse defenders.
Yeah, that's a great point, too. And that the pace of it, just overall
yes.
is going to be something to keep watching too. Keep this in mind, 86.5 possessions per team was the slowest. That was in game two. That was the slowest paced game of the postseason for the Nuggets, second slowest paced game of the playoffs, period. And I think that's kind of what Miami wants. They want to slow this thing down to a crawl. Also keep in mind,
like you said, they like to make it dirty.
They want to get dirty. Yeah, they want to muck it up a little bit, right?
Yep.
Also keep in mind, the Denver Nuggets are not great on the road, guys. They're just 23-25 on the road.
Yeah.
They're not great on the road.
They're not.
They got to go to Miami.
They will make something happen.
Well, Miami is 6-2 at home in the postseason. Shout out to my man Matt Butler sitting in that. Yeah. So they,
yeah, I also tell you, I think Jamal Murray is going to instigate a lot more of this offense. To take it to where you're not letting them start with the focal point of Jokic and you plan your defense around that. You started with Jamal Murray. If he cuts, now does Bam help off of that? Who helps off of that? It changes up your defense. So I think we'll see Jamal Murray handle the ball a little bit more instead of starting it in and playing out, playing it out, playing it in.
So totally agree. Definitely going to be the chess match between Mike Malone and Eric Spoelstra. All right, good stuff there, guys. We'll come back. We'll get into Raj Rant of the Day. Harsh Knock Life. Into Raj Rant of the Day. We already did Harsh Knock Life. It was a damn good one, so go check it out once we podcast it. Raj Rant of the Day, we'll go behind the burnt orange curtain. We'll talk some Texas football. We'll talk about the special assistants to the head coach who were hired, and I'll tell you about one concept that I am sure is going to be on the rise for Texas this upcoming football season. All that and more right here on Ball Don't Lie on 104. On the horn.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
No, you've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to Ball Don't Lie right here on 104.9 The Horn. I want to get to some Texas football discussion here. I went rabbit-holing about a concept over the weekend. I told you guys once the Paul Christ news was announced that he is going to join the coaching staff as a special assistant to the head coach, that there's one concept that just reading the tea leaves – and just looking at all the clues, all the signs are pointing to Texas using more of this specific concept. And you guys know, usually I don't lead you astray, whether it be about two back sets last year, whether that be about, you know, Texas using more empty sets back in the day, all that kind of stuff, right? Usually there are clues leading me to make those types of proclamations. Well, the 2022 offensive line class for Texas was one of the best classes in the history of college football for an offensive line haul, right? You had seven guys in that class, five in the 2023 class. That's 12 in the last 2 years. You just got a surplus of really good offensive linemen. Hell, that 2022 class was top five. It was the top class of offensive linemen in the last 5 years. Georgia and Bama have the other two classes each in that top five. So really highly rated and heralded recruiting class of offensive linemen. Kyle Flood, I've heard him at coaching clinics brag about how, and he's an offensive line coach and offensive lineman, so this is just how offensive linemen are, but he brags about how he wants to play six offensive linemen 35 to 40% of the time. Calls him his Big 11, Big 12 package. Big 11 meaning you would just have six offensive linemen. You put your three wide receivers on the field. Then you'd have your running back, and then you'd have your quarterback. That's what he says his Big 11. Big 12, you would just add a tight end in addition to the extra offensive lineman, tight end, two wide receivers, running back, and then your quarterback. So he got a Big 11, Big 12. And last year they played some Big 11, but mostly Big 12, because Big 12, you keep JT Sanders on the field. You don't want to take him off the field. And I heard him say this in the coaching clinic this past offseason, and I thought to myself, that's interesting, because when I did the research, I have Texas using six O-linemen, a little over 15% of the time, so it's not a tremendous amount, but enough to shake things up and, you know, play bully ball. When Sark wants to play bully ball, you know he's big on that. But then adding Paul Chryst, and my just basic knowledge of Paul Chryst throughout the years, he's been a huge advocate of bringing in extra offensive linemen. In the 2021 regular season, Wisconsin used six O-linemen on, I think it was 22 snaps versus Nebraska and Minnesota. That was like almost half of their total for the season. So at the end of Paul Chryst's tenure there at Wisconsin as the head coach, he started upping his usage of six offensive linemen or extra O-linemen. He did the same thing in 2012 where he had his call. They called it a barge package. They had seven O-linemen on the field. In 2019, they had a hippo package where they used six, seven O-linemen versus Michigan. In 2008 to 2011, Paul Chryst was the OC at Wisconsin, and Bob Bostad, I believe, was the O-line coach, and they deployed O-linemen as jumbo tight ends back then. So either way you want to look at it, Paul Chryst is big on it. And I remember when I told you guys about, you know, Brendan Marion coming on and how he was going to bring his go-go offense with his two tailback sets. And last year, what did Texas do? They used a ton of two tailback sets, right? 21 personnel. Why? Because, well, you have Bijan Robinson and Rojo. You probably have the best backfield in the country. You want to weaponize that. You want to be able to maximize that advantage. And Sark has said every year he changes his offense. He tweaks it just based on the personnel that he has, right? If he's got a star running back, or he's got a star wide receiver, or a star tight end. And I've told you guys, I think this year he's got himself a star wide receiver and a star tight end, and I think he's going to build the offense around those concepts. But one concept I can assure you're going to see more of, and more than 15%, will probably be the 6-0 line package. Now, I went back and did some research to find out where to start getting inspired by this. You know, I'm always a football theorist. I want to find the genesis of something, right, the root of it. The first mentions of really the 6-0 line package becoming popularized in the NFL happens around 09, like 2009, and mostly teams are using it for short yardage situations and for goal line situations. But some teams around that time started using the 6-0 line package in more standard situations and early down usage. That was rare. That was new. It was seen as a goal line short yardage package. Cincinnati, they were leading the NFL around 09 in 6-0 line packages, along with Baltimore and the Jets, with Brian Schottenheimer calling the plays. Shout out Bill Callahan as the O-line coach. And New England with Dante Scarnecchia as their O-line coach, famous O-line coach there. And they were using a lot of 6-0 line packages back then in 2009. And then you fast forward, you know, kind of past that period, there's some teams using it 2010, 2014. I found a lot of examples of it. Teams like the Raiders, the New Orleans Saints, because Sean Payton is a big, he's a big personnel package guy. So he runs probably more personnel packages than any team in the NFL. But 2018, the Seattle Seahawks decided they wanted to make it a mainstay in their personnel usage. They went from bottom 10 in rushing in the NFL in 2017 to the top rushing team in the NFL, actually, like number one. And they always had a problem protecting Russell Wilson. We all knew that. And actually, that season, they averaged 5.2 offensive linemen on the field per play through their first 14 games of the season. They were averaging more than five offensive linemen on the field because they were playing a ton of 6-0 line sets. Pete Carroll, famously, is a mentor for Steve Sarkisian. I'm not saying Sark got it from there, but I know Sark pays a lot of attention to what Pete Carroll does. And by the way, at that same time, Sark is in the NFL. He's coaching for Atlanta. All right, he's coaching Atlanta, and he's the offensive coordinator in Atlanta. He's following my boy Shanahan there. And when he follows Shanahan, he uses a lot of Shanahan's concepts to transition his offense, all right, from the Shanahan offense to the Sark offense, including using a lot of two tailback sets, which I brought that up because nobody uses more 21 personnel than Kyle Shanahan. But I digress, getting back to the 6-0 line sets. So even in 2018 and in 2019, Seattle, they're leading the NFL in 6-0 line sets in packages with six offensive linemen. There was actually a game, Monday Night Football game in 2019, where Seattle used six offensive linemen, 32 out of 43 rushing attempts. And they were second in the NFL in 6-0 line packages in 2019. obviously Sark has moved on then, but when Sark takes something or a concept that he likes, he usually just kind of puts it in his bag, saves it for when he needs it, like all great offensive minds do. And I think maybe, and I'll ask Sark if I ever get a chance, I think I'll have a chance maybe around Big 12 Media Days, where he got the inspiration for his bully ball package, the Big 12, Big 11 package. And I wonder if it's just serendipitous that he and Pete Carroll in the NFL around the same time started using that Pete Carroll started using the 6 O-line package. And now a former mentor of Sark's, Pete Carroll, and I wonder if Sark was inspired by some of that stuff from Pete Carroll. And also, in doing some deep dive about the 6 O-line package, because Sark wants to throw out of it, but they, I think 70% of the time Texas runs the ball out of 6 O-line package. But Sark wants to throw out of it. He wants to surprise teams, right? Remember my saying for last year, when you present power personnel packages and then you can pivot to play action pass principles, Sark did that a lot last year. I went and looked at every pass that Texas threw with 6 O-linemen on the field. How about these numbers? So 76% of the time, it was a play-action pass when they decided to throw the ball with a 6 O-line package. So heavy play-action pass usage. Around 75% of the time, too, when they passed the ball with the 6 O-line package, it was on first down. Trying to fool the defense, right? 6 O-line and on the field, you're thinking run all the time. You're probably extra linebackers on the field, and Sark wants to deceive you with a play-action pass. And he also took a lot of shots deep. Extra lineman in the block, got more time for routes to develop down the field. So when you did take a deep shot, 20 yards or more down the field, out of your 6 O-line package, 92% of the time that was a play-action pass. So you combine all that heavy.
92%?
Yeah, when they threw a deep pass with 6 O-linemen on the field, it was a play-action pass 92% of the time. But your play-action pass rate is 75% anyway.
Yeah.
So he's heavy play-action pass out of it. That's why he likes it so much, because automatically it triggers defenders to think run, run, run. And he caught him a lot slipping. So you got a high explosive play rate out of that just because you caught a lot of defenders slipping on early downs. He wants to use a lot more of it. You're going to be able to run the ball out of it. Last year they averaged almost 5.5 yards per rush out of it, but you had Bijan and Rojo. I think this year he wants to use the extra O-lineman to juice the running game a little bit more. So whoever that extra lineman is going to be, last year was Andre Carrick a ton. You're going to see it, you know, in multiple different ways this year, but you're just too deep at O-line, and all the signs, like I said, are pointing to you playing more of it. Does this mean you're going to play less of 11 personnel? I wouldn't worry about that. Sark loves 11 personnel, plays 11 personnel, one back, one tight end, 50% of the time. In 2021, 40%+ of the time in 2022. The only reason it dropped in 2022 is because you want to play more 2 tailback sets, 20 and 21 personnel, with Bijan and Rojo and Keelan Robinson on the field. You lost Bijan, you lost Rojo. You'll probably lose a lot of that 2021 personnel package too. And I think you'll end up using those reps in your 6 O-line package a lot of the times. So you'll get more heavy sets this year than you think. 12 personnel, one back, 2 tight ends. And you'll get your 6 O-line packages. You'll have more heavy looks than you like. Remember, Sark's a guy that wants to run the rock. He wants to run the rock.
He said it too. He's like Mike McCarthy.
Yeah, he likes playing bully ball.
Yep.
He really does. How do you think you won the Iowa State game last year and the Baylor game last year and the K-State game last year? You don't win that unless you decide playing bully ball at the end of the game. All right, we'll come back. We'll get into a little off the record on the other side right here on Ball Don't Lie, 104.9.
Obvious to you that at that time our love is through, even though we love each other in a special way. I couldn't give you.
Welcome back to Ball Don't Lie right here on 104.9 The Horn. It is a Smooth Soul Monday edition of Ball Don't Lie, and that's when we play jams that are intended to soothe the tortured soul of sports fans who may have had a tough weekend out there. All right, gentlemen, let's get to a quick off the record. How about this? This is a little shocking to me, honestly. Forbes have an article, and their article is based on the most valuable franchise, most profitable sports teams, period, over the past 3 years. So it's a cumulative study over the past 3 years. And, guys, and this is Major League Baseball, NBA, NFL, NHL, and soccer teams too. All right, so four of them all in there. Most profitable teams in sports last 3 years, Dallas Cowboys number one. Not shocking.
Shocked.
New England Patriots number two.
Not as it shocking either.
The Tottenham Hotspur EPL team number three.
Really talented team.
The Knicks are number four. The Knicks. The Knicks are having a bit of a comeback here, though, because the Knicks had a decent year. But this is like the first good year for the Knicks in a while, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, people say the same thing about the Cowboys. But
I was going to say, hold on, man.
Been winning 12 games,
man. 12 and 5 every year, man. Good. That's what we do. We win 12 and don't do anything after that.
Man U is fifth EPL team. That's the Glazer family.
They lost this weekend.
Oh, there you go. You had something on that, didn't you?
I just had a wandering eye.
Guys, how are the Houston Texans at six?
Hey, man.
Ahead of the Golden State Warriors and the Lakers. That's pretty wild. The Giants are at nine.
Yep.
Manchester City is at 10.
That's who beat them. That's who beat Man U.
Oh, that's who beat Man U?
Yeah.
Are y'all surprised the Texans? The Texans are what I want to talk about.
I'm really shocked by that, to be quite. You know how you said not surprised by the Cowboys? I'm definitely shocked by the Texans being there.
The last 3 years, they've been a fuster cluck.
Nobody's been going to the game, so how you making money?
How you making money?
Well, also, it's
crazy.
Like, you don't have a new building.
No.
Because, like, you know, if you have a new building, then your valuation goes up because, oh, well, you got the. I don't know.
I'm with you. Guys, I'm a Texans fan, and I am stupefied, dumbfounded.
Yeah. I'm shocked.
Yeah, I'm flabbergasted, and I don't use that word a lot as a black man, but it is. I can't believe that. And then, like I said, the Rams are at 11. Makes sense. Rams in California, got a new stadium, just won a Super Bowl. Oh, their valuation is probably skyrocketing.
Yeah, it's real interesting to see that they are at that number, especially over the last few years of what we've seen product-wise. We saw fans not going. Nobody's buying uniforms and stuff. I mean, jersey sales. Man. Like, what is really happening?
Is it just that football in the state is just that powerful?
Seems like, yeah.
If you're a football in this state, whether it's Cowboys, whether it's the Longhorns, whether it's the Texans, football is religion there.
It is.
Like, people. Guys, I'm an education major, and I was going to be a teacher and a coach, and my research told me they're closing down schools and building stadiums. So, might want to pivot.
Yeah. Good job. Good job, bro.
Well, I'm just saying.
Way to read the rule.
They really are. Yeah. They won't pay teachers and stuff like that. So, I was like, well, that's education. Go look how much the coaches are being paid in this state.
For sure. High school.
As compared to the teachers.
High school coaches, too, by the way.
And that's really, I love them. Yeah. They're all great. They're all doing God's work, but.
High school teachers. I mean, high school coaches are making quite a bit of money.
And it ain't all the other sports. It's football coaches.
Yeah. 100%.
Right?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Somebody said Cal is cooking the books.
Easter BD before he left.
Yeah.
That's one of those guys. It's the guy that gave the NDAs out.
The former secret service.
Yeah, that guy's helping him out.
Yeah.
Just around the list, Liverpool's at 12 behind the Rams. The Washington Commanders at 13. Chicago Bulls at 14. The Bears at 15. Dallas Mavs at 16. The Jaguars at 17. That's got to be their international growth, though.
Yeah, but we're saying that's the why Commanders. They keep going across. The Commanders. Is only because they just got bought for that, right?
Probably. That's probably a lot of it.
Like, because you can't say they have a terrible stadium.
They have a terrible
team.
Yeah, right.
They don't really have anything going for them other than the fact that they don't have Dan Snyder anymore. And so I guess it's...
And his name is still on the list.
I think this list might be a little bit off.
Well, he said it's for 3 years.
It's for the last 3 years, though.
I know, but... Well, you're right. Because the Commanders were so good 3 years ago.
Yeah.
But can you explain the Texans?
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, how are all of the other NFL teams not ahead of these guys?
Eagles are 24th on the list, behind the Rockets at 23, the Steelers at 22, the Jets are about to skyrocket a little bit too.
Yep.
On 21, the Dolphins at 20, the Broncos at 19, 18 Celtics, and then then we got the Jaguars. I just can't believe the Texans are in the top. Texans will be in 24th to 25th. I'd be like, that's fine, makes a lot of sense. They're at six.
If Texans were 24th in the NFL, I'd be fine with it.
Well done. True. True. This year, actually, we'll take that. I'll take that. All right. Let's get to some NFL news, notes, and nuggets. Speaking of the NFL, gentlemen, we'll talk about Cowboys OTA news, notes, and nuggets. Dak, where he's among the best deep ball passers in the league, and a lot of good news coming out about this receiver from Texans practice. All that and more right here on Ball Don't Lie on 104.9 The Horn.